Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And the 9/11 Commission has been back in the news recently for a number of reasons. One is the allegation by an Army officer that 9/11 ringleader Muhammad Atta was part of a terrorist cell identified by military intelligence in the year 2000, and that, in fact, Atta's location was identified as Brooklyn, but that the Army was not allowed to share that information with the FBI. That officer also claims he told all this to the 9/11 Commission, but that they never made it public. The commission disputes his account. Also, the latest 9/11 emergency response tapes that we played here when they were released shed some new light on issues the commission reported on. And as the 9/11 Commission actually continues its work independently, no longer an official government entity, it's been reported that the White House has refused to share any more documents with the commission, which the White House may not have been in love with as their work proceeded in certain directions. With us to talk about those issues, as well as higher education and more, will be 9/11 Commission member, former U.S. Senator, and president of the New School, Bob Kerry. He's with us now. Senator Kerry, always great to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. This is my first day back at work after a couple weeks vacation.
Well, me too. You weren't in the Adirondacks, were you?
No, I was not. We rent a place out on Shelter Island. So we were out in Shelter. My wife and I and son were out there.
So we didn't cross paths in a canoe on a lake up there. My first day back, too. Let me ask you first about this Muhammad Atta issue. Army Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer says the Army Intelligence Unit, known as Able Danger, identified Atta as part of a Brooklyn-based terrorist cell, or at least he was Brooklyn-based, in 2000 and was prohibited from telling the FBI about it and told all this to the 9/11 Commission. Do you remember interviewing Colonel Schaefer?
I didn't interview Colonel Schaefer. We had three people that went over to Bagram that he says at that time that they were told about Muhammad Atta. None of their notes reveal that, and we would have had absolutely no incentive not to bring Atta's name. Everybody knew him. He could be jet-lagged for as much as you want, and that name would have brought you to full alert. In fact, Able Danger doesn't have any documentation that that's the case. I'm not saying that what Colonel Schaefer says isn't true, but we just don't have any recollection of it, and we certainly wouldn't have kept it out of our reporting had that been provided to us orally in 2003.
It is now, pretty funny. I don't know what your motivation would have been either, except that Colonel Schaefer says the commission had a conflict of interest because commission member Jamie Gorelick, when she was in the Clinton administration Justice Department, was personally involved.
Oh, that's baloney.
In prohibiting Army intelligence from sharing the information with the FBI. It was part of her job to enforce
that.
Yeah,
but what Schaefer is saying is he was prohibited from telling people up the food chain in the Department of Defense. He isn't saying that he was prohibited from sharing it with the DOJ. He was saying that the Department of Defense was not paying attention to him. So look, at this stage in the game, as I know Congressman Weldon is on this thing as well, I say to Congressman Weldon, look, you are on a committee of Congress that has the power to subpoena all these documents. We're not in business anymore. I'm not even sure if Congress Weldon supported the 9/11 Commission. We're out of existence. We had limited authority, limited amount of time to operate, and limited subpoena power. And we used, I think, that subpoena power very effectively to get unprecedented access both to documents and personnel. But no one should suffer the illusion that we have more power than Congress. Congress can get these documents, can get a full accounting. I'd very much like to see Colonel Schaefer appear before a House committee to answer questions. Okay, if you knew about Atta, what did you know? How did you get that information? How did you get this photograph? And Weldon now says he doesn't remember if Atta was on the document that he provided Steve Hadley. But I'd like to see that document. I'd like to see what he provided Hadley. He says that Able Danger provided that information. But Congressman Weldon and the Republican Congress can get that information anytime they want if they're willing to use the subpoena power that we used, I think, relatively effectively when we had under the law the authority that the 9/11 Commission had.
And while you were on vacation last night, the 9/11 Commission spokesman, Al Felsenberg, issued a statement Thursday saying the commission's notes on Schaefer include no reference that he made to Muhammad Atta, which he now claims that he did make to you. So what do you think is up with this guy?
I don't know what's up with this guy. I mean, I honestly don't question his motivation at all. All I'm saying to you is that had he said the name Muhammad Atta, just said it out loud, so said, we knew about this guy, that would have set off every single alarm bell of all three of the individuals that were there.
Headline news.
It would have been headline news, absolutely. The commission, there was absolutely no incentive for the commission, no motivation. And to say it was because Jamie Gorelick wrote a memo in 95, I mean, Mr. Schaefer is claiming that DOD wasn't paying attention to him. And now DOD says they may have lost all the documents relating to Able Danger. So the bottom line for me is the 9/11 Commission under law had limited statutory authority, and we used it well. We subpoenaed documents and subpoenaed personnel as much as we thought we could possibly do given the limited amount of time that we had. And I just call on the Republican Congress to start doing the same. Use your own subpoena power to get access to individuals, to get access to documents, to get to the bottom of this, to find out whether or not what Mr. Schaefer and others are saying is true. It's very simple for them to do that. The 9/11 Commission does not have that authority any longer. We went out of business. We asked for authority to be extended, and the Congress turned us down. We got authority extended, I think, another 40 days in order to get our work done in July of 2004. Mm-hmm. But Congress has all the authority they need to get to the bottom of this.
9/11 Commission member, New School President Bob Carey, my guest on WNYC. You know, you were the first person in one of the 9/11 Commission hearings who I heard be really articulate about how the war on terror is misnamed, that it should really be something like the war against radical Islam, you said.
Right.
And now apparently Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Richard Myers are trying to rebrand it something like the war against global extremism. Are they on the right track? Have you heard this?
Oh, I think they're right. I think if you fight a war on terror, we'll be constantly frustrated. It's a tactic. And, you know, it's a tactic, by the way, that's sometimes used by our friends. So it's not something that I take lightly, particularly in the current environment that we're living in, where there are still significant numbers of human beings who are of the Muslim faith, who have fallen under the impression that terrorism is what they have to use in order to bring those leaders who are supporting modernism and other sorts of things in order to bring them down.
What's at stake, in your opinion, in this rebranding? Because I gather that President Bush is, in fact, resisting this from his defense chiefs and still prefers and insists on using in his speeches the phrase global war on terror. Does it matter or is it just semantics?
Well, I think it matters a great deal. I think there is unquestionably a war that's being fought in Afghanistan and in Iraq today. There are different kinds of wars than we first started, and there I think it's quite appropriate to use it. But it's not the global war on terror. I mean, the president's got a political motivation to lash these things up. He's going to, the Department of Defense on the 11th September, and the president's going to, I think, participate in, do this march, trying to link up 9/11 with Iraq and other sorts of efforts that make it sound like a global war. I don't think it's more than semantics. I think it enables us to separate out those things that need to be confronted with force. And some of them have to be confronted with force. Some of the individuals that have reached a conclusion that killing infidels is the only thing that they have to, the only thing that they can do, the only way that they're going to be prevented from doing that is if we're willing to use force. But if you don't separate it out, it's exceptionally difficult, it seems to me, both to develop the right target and to work with moderate Muslims. Or even conservative Muslims who understand that terrorism is the wrong approach, that violence is the wrong approach to dealing with all the various problems that they see with modernism. That's basically what's going on. Modernism is a threat to them. They consider it to be a threat to their religious beliefs. There are Christians who feel that way. There are Jews who feel that way. There are Hindus that feel that way. The difference is, we don't reach a conclusion that terrorism and violence is a correct course of action. We certainly don't have preachers any longer that are telling us that that's what we ought to do.
Bob Carey, my guest on WNYC. And speaking of rebranding, and tell me if the segue is a little bit of a stretch here, a new school year is about to begin, and the new school, of which you are president, is again tweaking its name. It was the New School for Social Research. It became the New School University. Now it's just the New School. What's the change about?
Well, it's basically saying the people that know this university call us that anyway. So It's a good name. People understand that that the New School is an institution that does things differently, that's connected especially to the arts and to the city of New York, and that it's willing to engage in critical debate. So they understand what the New School is. But what we were losing, I think, is both the power of that name, and I think we were confusing people who were trying to figure out who we were, because they would say, oh, I didn't realize Parsons and Manus and were a part of the New School. Those are the two big ones that people would say, I didn't realize that was a part of your university. Well, now they do, and because it's Parsons New School of Design, and I think school and university together is not very good English, and I also don't think it's necessary. So we're not really doing something terribly new so much as we are trying to be clear about how it is that we communicate what this university is doing.
Now, I knew about Parsons, but I didn't know until you just said Manus School of Music is part of the New School.
It's now Manus New School of Music. Yes, Manus became a part of the university in the 80s. It was in trouble financially, as was Parsons in the 70s when it became a part of the university. It was merged with the university in the middle 80s, and the change to New School University was an attempt, actually, to bring all that together. The problem is it didn't bring, in the public's mind, it together, because the names were separate, and when the communication occurred, oftentimes the communication occurred without telling people they were part of New School University.
I don't know if you saw this Times article when you were out on the East End, but a piece about how a number of colleges have been changing their names to attract more applicants. Beaver College did well by rebranding as Arcadia College. No surprise there. Western Maryland College changed to McDaniel College. Does any of this matter?
It matters, sure. Because at some point in time, the question is whether or not I'm proud of my diploma. Now, having said that, the most important thing is not what my name is, but what's the quality of my faculty? What's the quality of the programming? In other words, over time, am I proud to have that name on there as a consequence of the education that I got being valuable? It's among the reasons that we're now calling the graduate faculty, we're calling it the New School of Social Research, because that over time, that name is held up. Now, we have to continue to invest in our faculty. We have to continue to invest in our students. We have to continue to assess in a very objective fashion the quality of our programming, and if we do that, I think the name change will be an exercise that people say was worth doing.
Is there a central mission that you can articulate of the New School, or what the name or the brand means? I think a lot of people still associate it with a kind of a certain older progressive tradition.
Well, we want to continue to be associated with an older progressive tradition. We are a more progressive institution. We're an international institution. We're urban. We're part of the New York City community. All those things matter. Those are traditions that we don't want to lose. We very much have a significant investment in art and design. And among the things that we're attempting to do is to bring together the world of art and design, at Parsons in particular, with the social sciences and liberal arts, and develop an undergraduate curriculum that prepares young men and women to participate in solving the problems that we're going to face as a consequence of the forces of globalism that are really, I think, increasingly being seen both as a good thing, but also as a bad thing. So that means you got to understand economics and statistics, and you got to put it in the context of history. And because in New York City, without doing anything, almost a third of our students are international students. So it's we very much have a global impact as a consequence of that, and as a consequence of being the media capital and the financial capital and a number of other things.
9/11 commissioner, New School president, former senator Bob Kerry, my guest on WNYC. And I want to ask you to kind of combine these two things that you've been mostly working on in the last few years, the 9/11 commission and, of course, being president of the New School. Do you think that 9/11 has changed your student body in any way that you can identify?
Probably not. I mean, it's way that I can identify. The answer to your question is it has to have changed students, especially. I mean, last year's class was the class that were freshmen here. They came here as freshmen. They graduated in 2005, and it's the big moment of their lifetime. They stayed. They didn't leave. They didn't run away. And it was hard to stay here after September 11. And it was the physically it was difficult. There were additional threats. I would say that they're going to be stronger. And I think they'll have a view of the world that is different. They'll understand that, you know, that we're not going to kill nationalism and we're not going to kill religion. Both of those two are going to be important forces, but you got to bring them together with a global view. And I do think that it's likely that students that were here as a consequence here during 9/11 or recently afterwards, both will regard that as among the most important moments of their lifetime. And I think they're likely to acquire a more global view as a result.
You know, the commission also came up around the release of more 9/11 emergency response tapes about 10 days ago. You had concluded that some firefighters who were killed at the Trade Center refused to evacuate the second tower when ordered to do so, so they could save more lives. And people who've listened to these tapes say it seems that most of them actually never heard the evacuate order because of communications problems. Any thoughts?
Well, yes. I mean, we were quite critical of the communication system and that was in place on 9/11, as you recall.
Yes.
It was among the most controversial items. The former mayor and many other people thought we were too critical. A lot of the people that were in the fire department thought we weren't critical enough. So, yeah, it was painful reading what I've read thus far of the reports of that day. You know, in some ways you can never prepare for a moment like that, and you just do the best you possibly can. And I think overall that's what you get out of these stories, is that people responded. They figured things out. They persevered, and you know, there could have been a lot more people killed were it not for the heroism of people trying to figure out how to get out of those buildings and how to get them out, even with bad communication system and other problems that existed on the morning.
We just have 30 seconds left. You said the 9/11 Commission doesn't exist anymore. My understanding is it exists as an unofficial entity, and that there's even been conflict. You've been asking for more documents from the White House, but they've turned you down. What's left of the 9/11 Commission unofficially in our last 20 seconds?
Well, we're a 501c3 corporation. We have no authority under federal law. Our only capacity to do what we did came with the authority that were granted under federal law, in particular to subpoena documents and individuals. And I think we used it very well. Congress, in my view, has not used it very well to get to the bottom of a number of things that we simply couldn't answer.
10 seconds. Do you still want something from the White House?
I mean, we would like to get some additional documents. I mean, we've asked for some additional documents, and I think more importantly, my answer would be I'd like to see the White House cooperate with Congress to get to the bottom of a number of other issues that we raised.
Bob Carey, thank you so much.